Blog Talk Radio.
That you're here again. We can sit in together. What to make of the situation going on around us? Don't have any quick solutions for that. Some days are more grim than others, and this is one of them for me. I'm not prone to languishing, and my goodness, I like a distraction as much as the next guy. But I'm not really good inserting my own reality into what's going on around. To try and extract a meaning and have a thoughtful conversation during all of this with such a powerful distraction, well, it's not like it's being invented as it plays out. As much as I shake my head like many of you, we find history repeating itself with this added caveat always that we can't always be sure that our reaction, or however flaccid it might be, is going to continue that way. Maybe it's we're coming to that point where some unnecessary but unpleasant change about an acknowledgement about ourselves is coming forward. Look at the reaction of the Western world is to, well, you know, guns are being drawn and bombs are being dropped. We have a banking system put into play. We're adjusting bank accounts. Maybe that is the new reality of war. We adjust the victors adjust their bank accounts, hit them where it hurts in the wallet, but maintain systems of permanent control. That would mean the shift in the polarity, wouldn't it? That the fortunes of war are far outweighed by the fortunes of peace. This, will I live to see the day where that huge machinery of war that generates so much industry and profit for some people is supplanted by something else, some other industry? Well, maybe that's what I'm seeing today. Maybe that's what's happening then. I know that there's currency traders that are making money on this, and knowing that they didn't start it or stop it, we'll find that there are profits to be made, and why not? The profits seem to be coming at a price, because now I can, I've just looked at a map that outlines all of these gas stations here in North America that are owned by the Russian oligarchs. So boycott, you know, it's about the access to that information. personal accounts, and people are being named, and personal accounts are being trotted out for to be targeted. It's a different kind of war. There's still a battlefield, and yes, there is courage. People are digging in and fighting for their country. And then there is this, what's going on as the world, I don't know if it's as much waking up as convulsing. And didn't we think that there would be an inevitable end to this run of profit? Which side of this is not pointing out the exploitation by the other side? If you're over there, our system is exploiting, and yeah. And over here, we say the same, and yeah. It's as if we're somehow trying to displace it all. That it doesn't matter, but it does. And I'm sure rather uncomfortable protests that have been going on are emerging of the right wing, which is better that we know who and where, has become quieted. Although I imagine there are people flexing their muscles and with a belly full of courage, false courage, claiming the clarity and power of fascism. So who's there? I don't think we are insignificant in these discussions, my brethren. I don't think at all. I think when and how we speak up might get us a punch in the nose or shot, but at least we could be a bit more judicious, because those conversations that you want to have, you will have, we will have. Somehow we will handle them, the morality of what's going on. Don't have justification for this kind of stuff. So, we're in the midst of something. Again, we find ourselves together. I don't think we're this time we're clinging so much as gathered together, watching and waiting. And you know, there are people around us that are advisors that are accurate. They have this uncanny ability. And I've never known whether it's the plight of my optimism that I'm never quite able to. Sometimes I can work with the scalpel, but a lot of times it's more like a meat cleaver. Not quite as bad as using a chainsaw on logic. But do we need distraction? Well, I'm a little too old for that. No, I do. Will I enjoy it? Will I enjoy that it distracts other people? Yeah. Will I enjoy that it gives other people some sense of pause? Well, there are times when I've met those folks, and so have you, when we do need to take a breath. Just, you know, whether it's dark humor or how do you adjust your perspective and then go back at it. Well, that's been our way for a long time. And where I live now, we are living amongst us is a lot of people who have gone through that for themselves in their own way. Some considerable threat, and found that here we enjoy the safety that alone is an experience that we would might want to share with other people. But, you know, ideology is ideology. And we will, it's part of the narrative, and we will, I think we will resolve this one day. One day, as I say. And I think the resolution might be unpleasant and uncomfortable and around me right now, around us right now. And I might be looking at this incorrectly, thinking that our banking systems aren't a weapon of war. And yet, hard to ignore that the bottom, it's one of those, no pun intended, bottom line issues. Will people, life go on? Yeah, well, and we will be changed by it. And I think this has valuable lessons. But shit, when somebody is shooting at friends, makes me sound like an idiot saying, oh, well, we're going to learn. There's a silver lining here. Bullshit, there's a silver lining. It's ugly. And I'll get around to the silver lining later, but right now, take shelter. Defend yourself. Defend ourselves. Do what we can. Do what we must. And the ethics of our actions, they may haunt us to the grave. But that whatever drive keeps you grounded, bring it out. Whatever it is, it's important that you survive the night. Get through the night, however you do. And we can work with what comes in the morning. We always do. Showing a little love and affection, and a bit more generosity and understanding for our fellows around us. This would be a good time, wouldn't it? Yeah. And for goodness sakes, where I am, we don't have that Southern Mafia mentality going on around me. At least I don't think so. But sometimes we indulge ourselves, gentlemen, in these Masonic pillow fights. Yeah, we haven't quite reached that point of clarity. Not yet. We get there, but, you know, this is the downside. Might be a good time to stop embarrassing ourselves. there's life without drama. There's life without drama. It's life without silliness. Do you read about it? That's where the influences come. It's in your choice of entertainment, in your choice of literature. Look for yourselves at the themes. Is it fantasy? We reject this reality? Well, yeah, I can understand that, but it's the one that we live in. And how long do you need to do that? And is that, you know, at the end of the day, where's it taking you? Is it working for you? Are you feeling, does it offset your anxieties? And probably not. But it's a little tiny anecdote, isn't it? Even the boys coming back, you know, that when they catch their breath and they realize what they've done, and they realize it all, you know, it can be quite overwhelming. Just knowing that there's people around that get it. Oh yeah, you ball up our little fists and say, well, if you haven't been through what I've been through, you really don't understand. Yeah, really. I think the majority of adults understand loss in their own way, and pain, and suffering and fear and loathing and guilt and grace and forgiveness. And it's not that somebody else is walking in my shoes or I'm doing that with somebody else. It's that if what's happening in your life, that trauma is close to what it feels like for me, oh, my God, is there no hope for the widow's son? Eh? It's tragic that it happens to good people. So make it a song, make it a poem, make it a story. But it's not the totality of story, totality of a life. It's what you went through. And life still goes on for you. You're one of the survivors. And we shouldn't forget. We shouldn't forget. Maybe in a way, war tattoos a number on all of us. And there's a message in this of nobility, the courage of a people to put one foot in front of the other and move on. Never forget, but learn. Learn from the mistakes of others. Eh? Let me get to the show today. It's a good show. Yeah. A reprieve, just a temporary bit of ice that we're going to stand on together in this flowing wet river. If you've not seen that where you are, it's interesting. Every year, some one or two people, hunters or fishermen, will float away on a bit of a flow as a piece of ice they've been working on breaks off. And more often than not, we shake our head and then we go out and rescue them. That's the way it is around here. But just watching it, you know, it's kind of interesting, especially when you see the fellows that aren't so screaming and carrying on. It's like they're sitting there and they're just moving along, yelling, "Come and get me." You know, I ran out of cigarettes or I ran out of coffee. You know, okay. Yeah, it's serious, but it's always in where we are. It's put into perspective. Nobody's running down the halls for their little jazz hands flapping. Get on with it. And don't do that again, you idiot. That's what we're going to do. Get on with it and don't do that again, you idiot. Maybe the music will take on a different kind of poignancy today. Maybe the silence will. We don't hear anything whistling over our heads. And if you do, maybe we are the distraction here in the sonic effects that you need. For all the people, imaginary and otherwise, who are under siege, it matters that we think of you and connect with you in whatever way we can. And it's not just words, we will and are and getting things organized. We've had things organized for a long time, but you know, the oligarchs, the orchestrators of this recent war aren't the first to invent subterfuge. Far from it. They didn't invent the chess game. No. And we're not bad at it. You know, we don't like to bring too much attention, but we're not bad at it. And that's all we can say. Come back in a little bit. We'll talk again. Let this soothe you. If you're fortunate enough to have a quiet atmosphere around you, maybe a peaceful scene, something to treat the eyes. Maybe today during the show, we'll appreciation will deepen just a little bit. Just a little bit. On days like this, I appreciate the sanctuary of a lodge. Just a pause. A moment of thought and connection with the meaning of what's happening around. I need that periodically because there's times when logic fails or runs behind me. And I'm not prone to romanticizing the whole of my existence, no. But there's times when it's just grim. Here I offer you a commentary today. I titled it and expectations. How do we remain grounded when there is so much happening around to discourage any reasonable man? A few rereadings of Ritual produces some interesting findings. This is one that landed on my desktop quite unexpectedly. Definitive? Absolutely not. No more or no less interesting than your own. More compelling? If we compare to the extractions passed along to us in good faith, we can ask if our own thoughts resonate. Mine, they automatically do not. If there is another idea, it is always better than mine, except when it isn't. But by combining them, doesn't it make sense that we might find undiscovered synergies? Masonic motifs, we are told, are not always on the surface. Some, and we have no idea how many, are allegory within metaphor, within symbolism. If that makes them puzzles, then they are secrets from me and likely from you too. What is it that keeps us grounded? I can't say what it is for you, but for me, it's the erudite conversations said in whispers. Or the sincere conversation. I lean in. Disclosures of critical thinking, said as if that alone is a violation of commitment. I criticize. Except Masonry does give legitimacy to skepticism and even cynicism. It is the premise with which we begin. First, darkness. And then the penetration of light chasing away ignorance and superstition. Thank God. Truly, do I live in a black hole where all matter is just being absorbed? Of course, when we learn this, we expect the world will now fall at our feet, amazed at our intellectual dexterity. We will be unchallenged when equipped with this secret knowledge, entitlement, and we can measure its ability to last with a simple experiment. Stopwatch in one hand, push the other into a bucket of water. Begin the count by pulling your hand out and measuring how long the shape of it lasts. Or is that the amount of time our significance lasts when we are gone? Thank you. We have some skin in this. We have some skin. How to offer hope without sounding ridiculous, without being self-serving. That's the unvarnished part of ourselves. Sometimes it's quite spontaneous. Little kids can do it. They don't have all the baggage that we do. If you listen, maybe that's one of the cruelest ironies of all, that to do something meaningful right now is to listen and take seriously what it is we're hearing. Here. Do you have place in your heart and your mind for a poet? This is today we're showcasing D.H. Lawrence, who died a long time ago in 1930. He was an author and a writer, and he wrote short stories and poems and plays and essays and travel books. And he has some very famous novels, Sons and Lovers, he wrote in 1913, The Rainbow in 1915, Talk About War. Eh? And then right after, he published Women in Love, 1920. That made him one of the most influential English writers of the 20th century. He was the son of a Midlands coal miner. Drinker, his dad was a drinker, and he was one of those boys that went to the mines at 10 years old. His dad was illiterate, but his mom came from the southern part of England. She was more educated and refined and pious. That must have been interesting dating, eh? And this boy, Lawrence, won a scholarship to Nottingham High School. And at the age at 16, as boys tended to do at the time, he left to get a job as a clerk in a factory. But then he had an attack of pneumonia. He had to give up the job. And while he was convalescing, he began visiting a farm nearby and had an intense relationship with Well, as you do when you're vulnerable, eh? And you're a boy with a young girl, Jessica Chambers. And he became a pupil teacher in 1902, and he was brilliant. He did well in national examination. Back in those days, you sat one exam, the whole country. And he was encouraged by this young girl, and he began to write. His muse, I guess. And he was published a few years later in a local newspaper. Can you imagine? He'd feel chuffed. Eh? And he went on writing, and he studied at University College in Nottingham. And he became a teacher, and he went on writing. And he wrote about contrasts. Now, I don't have a lot of a breakdown on this poem that I chose of this guy. But I felt that he was, well, the title of the poem was so provocative. I don't know so much if this is about what he was trying to say, although I like to emphasize that. It's like looking at the painting. What was the artist trying to say to us? And then a lot of artists will say it's what you take from it. Ah, so there's the message, an opening of idea. This is his poem, In Trouble and Shame. It's a short little piece. You tell me what it's about, please. I look at the swaling sunset, and I wish I could go also through the red doors beyond the black purple bar. I wish that I could go through the red doors where I could put off my shame like shoes in the porch, my pain like garments, and leave my flesh discarded, lying like luggage of some departed traveler. Gone, one knows not where. Then I would turn around, and seeing my cast-off body lying like lumber, I would laugh with joy. Such a fool, eh? Being in touch with shame and trouble. And then creating in his mind a sense, a fantasy of being able to unload and unburden yourself by casting it off like garments. My shame, like shoes in the porch. So I don't offer this poem out there for us to relive our shame. It's like that happens to everybody in life. And you'll find people that will want to try and embarrass you by getting you to talk about or admit to shame. Cut to the chase scene. They're trying to do it. What's their point? Yes, okay. Have you ever done things that have embarrassed you or shamed you? Yes, that's how we learn, isn't it? Isn't that the foundation of conscience? Yeah, well, does D.H. Lawrence talk to you today? And what of all that fright that's going on? It ripples. That noise and clamor. This is like the Vietnam Wars. Do you remember? For the first time, the cameras were right there. There was no overriding narrative or persuasion or propaganda. We saw what we were doing. We saw what was going on. We weren't at all happy. And did it make a difference? Damn straight it did. And the lesson was not lost. Was not lost. And now every child is pulling out their smartphone and sending that scene, what they're seeing, to the world. We look intimately over the shoulder of all these people. And it's a visceral reaction. So the fools that think it's only the target in the crosshairs of their guns that matter. Yeah. Don't mean to be cynical, but shit, the world's changed.
Thank you.
Coleman Hawkins and Ben Webster. The old standard Tangerine. This is the history portion of the show. And here, this part reminds us of the official record. I wonder what the official record will say about what's going on around us and what's happening over there in the Crimea. It'll be polished up, cleaned up into stereotype, necessarily bad, as long as we recognize that it's there to help us. It's a study tool. It cleans it up so we can examine. And that process would have went on here. And we have historical findings now that make us question these assertions about four lodges. We're talking about the period of officialdom, official records. But we know Masonry has been well documented, but 14th century, we're talking about early 18th century. So there's, 400 years in there somewhere, give or take. And records were being kept, but not official, because that requires some constitutional authority to lay claim and say, now it's official because we're pointing it out to you. Listen to the blatherings of somebody that's trying to rationalize authority. In Britain, the official records began with the founding, maybe, born out of four lodges. The attendance was really spotty, boys, really, that. And of the ones that are on record or were on record, and we have, this is published, the findings are published in newspaper. So not exactly. But of course, a person could have been making it up. We didn't have fact finders back then, I don't think. We relied on that silly old truth, integrity. But it sounds more plausible that one lodge had more of an initiative and convinced the other lodges. And that's the version of history that has caught my eye for the past couple of years. Official Masonic English, but not Scottish history, begins with that date. Well, there you go. I'm paying too much attention to my roots. Huh? The history of the actual transition in England to speculative Freemasonry, the Society of London Gentlemen documented in Anderson's Constitution, the 1723 version, appears lost forever. Maybe that's all right. The English Guild records simply have not survived. But what remains of the 17th century English history of Freemasonry resides in manuscript fragments, at least one of which has only recently turned up. Recently being around the time this thing was being published, and that's from 1991. So yes, there's been a lot going on. Our historians and antiquarians have not been sitting idle. This early Masonic document dates from 1659 and can be found in the library of the Royal Society in London. It makes links between Masonic guilds and early fellows of the society. The manuscript's location should not surprise us. It contains a long rendition of the various signs and words used by practicing Masons, by which they could identify one another. But mixed into the account is the text of the Mason's Oath, which requires that a brother, quote, keep all that we or your attenders shall be you kept, keep secret from man, woman, or child, stock or stone, and never reveal it but to a brother or in a lodge or free mason, and only observe the charges of the Constitution. These working masons made mention in their Constitution and then recount a fanciful history of their governance. It goes back to medieval times when they had an assembly or parliament. Their ancient status and respectability, it is claimed, derived from their knowledge of geometry, the chief of all the liberal sciences, a knowledge which can be traced back to Hermes, the ancient father of wisdom. And in medieval times, the lodges were given a charter by the king and his council, which is here identified as a parliament. Masons were also paid real wages. This manuscript perhaps tells us more about the 1650s, the rise of parliament and the prevalence of wage earning than it does about the medieval origins of the Freemasons. What is important about it lies in the early references to forms of political governance that we associate with the 17th century revolution. By contrast to documents such as the Royal Society manuscript stands Anderson's 1723 account of the transition from operative to speculative Freemasonry, an account which is sketchy and terse. Based on this, Masonic histories have tended to focus on certain benchmarks, which, it is claimed, denote the appearance of true speculative Freemasonry. Among them, and most important, is the use of certain terms, particularly constitutions and grandmaster. These appear first, it is argued, only in 1717. Prior to that date, Masonry, again argued from Anderson, was essentially artisanal and operative and had nothing to do with constitutionalism. Any society of Clotre using these such terms could not therefore be Masonic in the 18th century meaning of the term. What is usually missed in the discussion is the obvious. Early 18th century English Masonic usage of the term constitution was uniquely modern because it derived from the 17th century revolution. As the 1659 document illustrates, by that time the Constitution had come to mean the laws and customs by which a community agrees to be governed. That modern usage is what the English lodges meant by their 1723 constitutions, and that is what was transmitted to the continent. You see, who's making the observations? And if I'm writing, thinking, if I'm cynical enough to think, well, you weren't there. My audience will be 100 years from now, and what will they really want to hear and know? Well, I need to curate what's happening, don't I? I need to be selective about the history. Do you want to know about the stumbles? Well, the stumbles, the gossip, you know, as historians are prone to tell you, that explains volumes more than what the, quote, official record reveals. So it's like learning history as a boy that was only written about military conquest, as if that's the only function. Like today, we have military operation. Today, what's happening in the air that you breathe? Children are still being born. People are still growing old. Builders build. The narrative continues. So much. And how do you organize that? Well, you start with the question, What question do you want to answer? In a way, we're like travelers. You know, we walk past. We see things, we walk past. So I break off today and leave you with some music. Un moment les passants. So this is one of my favorite performers, jazz singer from Paris, from Montmartre. She's singing about Montmartre, you know, that notorious area, part of Paris. And this is a song about walkers going past this poor girl. She's been thrown out. She's of an age where father can't afford her and won't keep her. She's destitute. She doesn't have means. And she knows when she goes on the street what's expected of her in order to survive. This is a song of her becoming weary and ill. She's starving. And this is the song about the walkers, people walking past. Keep it together, brethren. The focus, this is where your lessons and your diligence provides a dividend that people going into the club really don't identify with. Hope you're well and safe to everybody within the scope of my range of my voice out there. That you and yours are well and safe, and I look forward to our next conversation. Thanks for sitting in today.
Hey, Saturn. Axel.
Chaque mois se joue dans des cycles différents. Et en avance, en nous,
Ça se passe à la dernière espace.